I wrote for like 2 hours this morning doing the research on the beta, and it's really dope. Just all the details that it provides and how it's used as a tool for anything else. And one way that I looked at it as a tool, and maybe this could be in addition to the conversation that we'll have for the actual episode, is I looked at basketball stocks because I really used to like doing standard deviation measurements and statistics, but I always applied it to real world thing, and sports is the easiest thing to do that with because the stats are readily available. And so, I took a review of the Southwest Division of basketball, which is the Rockets, the Grizzlies, the Spurs, as well as the Mavericks are part of that conference in New Orleans. And I looked at their top 5 point guards. Chris Paul had an 8.9 assists per 36 minutes. Jrue Holiday 6.0. Dennis Smith 6.3. Tyreke Evans 6.0. DeJounte Murray 5.6. And the average of all the players' assists average per 36 minutes is 6.56. And so when you
So that's the
calculate,
standard.
yeah, that's the standard. So that's the average. But you could really tell the comparison by measuring the standard deviation, which is 1.187, which means a standard way of knowing what is normal for the Southwest Division point guards, what's extra good and what's extra bad. Extra good will consist of the average plus that standard deviation at 7.7 assists per 36 minutes play. Extra bad will consist of point guards who average less than 5.3 assists per games, which is 6.56 minus that 1.18 per 36 minutes. So doing the review, none of the selected point guards played below the deviation point of 5.3 assists. But if the other four Southwest Division teams wanted to place more value on assist and look for a player that would be considered an extra good division assist leader, the teams would have 22 active players to choose from that would fit their requested profile. So in doing that result, it shows the limitations of the measurement as a consensus second best player in the division didn't play last year due to injury, and there's no way to include stamina in the measurement. That Mike Conley was done last year. There are no stats. So as 36 minutes performance doesn't reflect per game performance, as most of the players don't play 36 minutes per game, only two players came close to playing 30 minutes per game. The standard deviation or variance and beta are other ways to measure performance as compared to the average, but they can't tell the whole story of what is beta and how does it measure. And so when comparing those two topics, it all made sense. That variance is just a tool to use. It won't tell us the whole story, but it's useful when you're trying to see how the stock has performed. And then you realize how many measurements just revolve around the S&P 500 and not NASDAQ or NYSE or CBOE or Hong Kong. It's the S&P 500. And that part really impacted me, and I probably spent way too much time doing just that aspect of it.
But based on what we're doing and what we're discussing, it's helpful because it's one more thing that you can add to the toolbox. Because honestly, before this, maybe you knew about it. I didn't know about it. So it kind of changed how I look at stocks and, how I decide where I want to go based on the volatility. Like, am I trying to go for a quick gain, or do I want to do a slow burn? What's the beta? Because the stock market, let's say the stock market is at a one. If the beta is at 1.40, then that's 40%, more volatility in a sense. So, yeah, I get what you're saying.
And so, no, and I didn't have much background on the beta conceptually, or I might have heard the term when watching movies like Margin Call or reading articles, but I never dug into how it affects or how you could use it as a tool for measuring things. So yeah, I'm happy we're continuing with our subject of volatility. I just Even when we thought about it a couple of weeks ago, I never thought we would spend 3 weeks on volatility and how important that would be to the overall understanding of investing.
Right. But man, volatility is everything. It determines what you want to do, it can change what you want to do. It basically gives you an idea of, you know, high volatility means high risk, high reward. But low volatility, you basically know what you're getting yourself into. And even if it starts to change, it changes at a slower pace. So, yeah, I think it's good that we're giving people a chance to get a better idea of volatility. Like, they're not just going in trying to do things head first and without having an idea of what they're doing and no idea to gauge it first as far as what's the volatility, what's the rate that I'm getting myself into.
In Consumer Watch, a federal judge approved the landmark merger between AT&T and Time Warner, a major blow to the Justice Department, which sued to block the deal. Now, the ruling yesterday allows the $85 billion deal to go forward without restrictions.
It gives AT&T access to Time Warner's assets, including CNN, HBO, and its content. And now some critics argue that the merger may be so large it could hurt competition and consumers. To help break down what comes next, we are joined now by CBS News financial contributor Melody Hobson, who is in San Francisco. Good to see you.
Good morning.
So, Melody, walk us through the significance of this ruling.
It's huge. I mean, this is a big deal, not just in size, just in terms of the whole media landscape changing because of it and the dominoes that are expected to fall afterwards. We are seeing a resetting of the media table right before our very eyes.
So the Justice Department argued, Melody, that this was going to be really bad for consumers. We were going to see our rates go up. What sort of changes can we expect and how quickly?
Okay, so one, I think they're going to move really fast. They've had 20 months while they've been waiting for this deal to happen to think about what they want this company to be. I think you can expect to see Time Warner and AT&T integrate very, very quickly and come out very aggressively with things like tiered pricing for their customers and the like and new types of packages, etc. So that's one. They've had time to think about it and work on it. In terms of pricing itself, it is not clear to me that it's necessarily going to mean higher prices. Now, they may sell you more things, but I don't think they'll necessarily upcharge you for what you're already buying. And for one reason, they have the pricing power, but they're chasing Netflix and Amazon that is delivering content to individuals very cheaply. Netflix, you can buy a package or a subscription for as little as $7.99 a month. And Amazon, if you're a Prime customer, you get their media buy for free. So that's always going to be the back of their minds because that's what they're chasing.
So the question, I guess, Melody, is how will this ruling impact future deals like Comcast's bid to buy 21st Century Fox? It feels as if perhaps a lot of other of these types of networks are going to look and say, there's this huge behemoth in the room. How do we compete against that?
No question. So I'm hearing that Comcast will come for a counter bid for the Fox assets that Disney is already trying to buy. There are rumblings they may have a financial backer with them, and they may not be coming alone for this asset. I'm hearing Disney wants it and is going to react, and they're in it to win it. You also have to think about what will Verizon do now that its biggest competitor, AT&T, has this content part of its business. They have a new CEO that's going to come in. Now, there's talk that maybe that individual is more committed to doubling down on the cellular and 5G business and not so interested in the media assets, but we'll see. And then we have the CBS Viacom legal fight that is going on that is probably on hold, anything happening with either of those companies until the fall when the judge makes a decision. So there's a lot going on right now, a lot.
Yeah, I'm just curious. You know, often when there are mergers like this,
oh, and on one more note before we jump into it, and I just sent it to you so you have an opportunity to review it. I think I identified a new pet peeve, and maybe that's because I'm hitting that 35-year-old range, so it means I'm getting to old man level. And so my new pet peeve is we went to a restaurant yesterday with close friends. We went to college together, everything. So it was the four of us plus our four collective kids that went to dinner. And we went to Gringo's, which is a Mexican restaurant. It has a playground up front. They give ice cream cones when you're leaving. But it's always at these restaurants that, of course, your kids are a little louder because it's 6:30. It's not like a 7 p.m. or an 8 p.m. dinner by candlelight. It's a Tex-Mex restaurant. And you always get people that kind of turn around like maybe your kids are being too loud and give you dirty looks. And they could have been confused because it was a Japanese and black person, a Mexican, and then one white guy. So that could have been what the look of confusion was. But they kept giving like the women dirty looks like with your kids. And all I could think is the nerve of people. You come to a restaurant that has a playground up front. And you're mad that there's kids in there making noise? Like, how about you spend $5 more for your meal and go to a place that has actual reservations? Like, I don't take my son out to a restaurant with reservations. I get a babysitter for that. But if there's a playground or they give crayons and a menu when your kid walks in, I'm bringing my kid. And if they're loud, that's the place. They know that's part of their business model, that I'm going there because there's a cheap kid's meal. They have lids for cups. And I'm not really interrupting anyone's romantic dinner. And that's
fair.
Yeah, that's just a rant I wanted to kind of get off before we get into the show.
Go ahead, man. Go ahead and discuss the things that grind your gears, sir. And I have Sprint, so I won't be able to actually see what you sent me, but I will.
Okay, so you were checking on the phone real fast. Trying to see.
No worries. No worries. We'll figure it out. We're good.
It will come through because I've noticed lately Sprint has also been working on some phone calls, but some phone calls it's not. So let me see if I can send a text message and it'll come through. For once, my internet on my phone is actually working. This thing is horrible.
Yeah, we both got Sprint. So.
Did you see the merger go through for Comcast Time Warner?
Did it go through?
It did go through. Approved. So that has two effects, is one being, just think, when Time Warner bought AOL, or when AOL bought Time Warner, that was one of the biggest moves in history. Then AOL goes by the wayside, Time Warner is Time Warner, and now Comcast, the largest cable company, is buying the second largest cable company and everything within it. Now the additional aspects of it is now that deal's done, now Comcast is going after who were they going after? I'm sorry, it escaped me for a second. Oh, they're going after Century 21. So Disney's going to end up paying more to get the X-Men franchise and all that because now Comcast is like, no, we're going to offer you more money. So the company has to listen since they're answerable to their shareholders and the amount that their shareholders are getting on the deal.
Wow. I'm curious to see with cable because I kind of feel like with this merger, I would imagine prices are going to go even higher than they are. And it kind of seems like people who have cable are getting punished for it based on the prices that they have to pay. So hearing this news makes me want to call some people like, hey, we need to reconsider this whole cable thing.
Or the price of cable could be coming down because now net neutrality is done. Cable companies could restrict what you have access to watch. So if they want to get more people back to cable, Comcast already called me and say, you spend $75 a month on your internet to get 150 speed. We will charge you $60 and add cable for you, but you have to sign a 2-year contract. But that doesn't include anything restricting. Now that the rule's officially in place, technically they have the right to say, you know what, we're going, since we have part of Hulu but don't own any of Netflix, we're going to slow the speed so you can't stream Netflix as much, hopefully pushing you back to our streaming devices. And it's in their right under federal law now.
And I wonder, are we going to be in an age in the future? The text came through. I got it. I wonder if we're going to be at an age in the future where internet access is not only limited, but to a point where you basically have to be in a certain tax bracket to even have access to it. I know that sounds crazy, but...
No, I think you're absolutely right that... Currently, the hypothetical papers that I'm reading are indicating the federal government will probably mandate accessibility to media sites that are news related, that everybody will have to have access to those, but they will let the cable companies maintain priority lanes for entertainment vehicles. So if you're in a high tax bracket and you have 120 a month to spend, you could probably buy cable and they'll say no restrictions because you're spending 120 a month. But if you're the person currently getting subsidized for cable, because like if somebody has a WIC subsidy, they also qualify for discount cable to where, or discount internet and cable to where they can get that for $30 a month, because it's important not just to them, but as a citizen to stay informed that they have access to the internet and the news. Now, right. For those customers, cable companies will be like, yes, they need access to the news, but they do not need access to Netflix or even if their friends account on Netflix. So we're going to deprioritize that to where maybe they have enough bandwidth to watch one episode a day. They can no longer binge watch it and might have to buy it from us.
Just doesn't seem legal, but it definitely seems like it's coming.
Yeah, it's going to be here. And hopefully our legislator can make a decision. Like California, New York, and Washington already have laws on the books saying cable companies can't prioritize traffic. We just need other states or the Senate or in the House of Representatives to pass legislation to do the same. And we would need them to pass it at a higher than – I think 65 or 70% to avoid a veto.
Yeah, but with this merger and with those deep pockets, who's to say there won't be some people persuaded to vote differently?
Oh, I agree. But
wow.
But and then on the other note, I had a random thought is, remember, I think this was 10 years ago when New York was first mandating that there had to, that national companies or companies working in New York had to post calories on their menu. And remember how many companies lost their shit after being told to list calories? They made up excuses. It's going to make us lose business. This is this is government intrusion. This is going to hurt the public and make it more expensive. And we look back now, like it didn't make anything more expensive. And in fact, it probably led to better business opportunities for these companies because they had calories on the menu and the public really didn't care, but it helped people at least make an informed decision that if I'm getting a Big Mac, it's 1,200 calories. If I'm getting even the McDonald's salad, it's 600 calories. So it could at least be informed. Thinking about that makes me laugh of thinking how mad the companies were and how much they fought it. And now right. It's just a part of their everyday life and makes no difference.
Not at all. In fact, some guys are trying to get stuff that has more calories because they feel like they're going to be full quicker. Like it has no real bearing on anything.
So
not like they thought it would.
Yeah, it just goes to say for all the anti-regulation people that – sometimes regulations help businesses, all businesses, and help the public at the same time. Nobody right. lost their job because of that. In fact, companies most likely either had to hire nutrition consultants or nutrition companies to get those exact measurements. So it was actually a job creator as a regulation. It benefited the public in a better manner.
Yeah, I feel like when you're dealing with corporations, you need some level of regulation because corporations will do whatever they can in excess because at the end of the day, they're being ran by people and people can be influenced by greed or whatever else. So you need something in place just in case to protect the people.
And I'm not even blaming – well, there has to be blame placed on the people running it. But it's ultimately blamed on the structure of the same thing that we're trying to learn about is companies have to do everything to make their investors more money. And subsequently, that means sometimes cutting corners to where when customers are making year over year profits, they really don't care how it's being done. But then when the conflict comes in, there's always a fall guy and the company gets back up. Like, very rare the company doesn't recover. So you do have your Enrons, but you have many more companies that go through multiple public relation concerns and survive because the overall goal of the company is to maintain their fiduciary duty and make the investors money.
What happened with Starbucks being an example of that?
I could see, yeah, that they handled the PR different than other companies, but absolutely that makes a difference.
Yeah, fair point.
And that's just, and that goes into the people that you're indicating, that Starbucks and I can't think of another big coffee brand, but there has to be the second tier coffee brand. Starbucks and Tim Hortons. Canadians are nice. Starbucks and somebody else out there, they would have handled it different because of how their investors. At Starbucks, you tend to have some more public relation, earth conscious investors. Like, half of their portfolio is, it's going to cost you more money because we're not using straws because that saves the earth. Or it's going to cost you more money because these beans were sourced from this tribe and we're giving $1 to save the rainforest. And that's part of their business model. A business model that's telling you, if you go to Stripes to get coffee and they're like, well, we have a public relations nightmare. And they're like, what do you expect for 79-cent coffee?
You get what you pay for.
You get what you pay for, or our investors are just different investors. They're not the ones who care right. about that.
Right.
So, well, speaking of companies, this week the Fees Always Win Index performed at a 7.67% returns on a four-week basis.
Oh, wow.
Led by one of your stock picks, which is just blowing everything else away. The LO index finished at 11.48, and the CRIS index finished at 3.87. And I blame my loss on Host Hotels, but at least I'm going to get a dividend, so it's not exactly the negative 1.25 growth of the whole 4 weeks, because I will be getting a dividend at the end of the quarter, most likely.
Right, right.
But that being said, Dave & Buster's 36% in 4 weeks, Ello. I hope you really invested in this stock.
Yeah, man. I'm glad I did. Like, I think at the time I was telling you, I was hoping to see something. I was hoping to see some type of growth. So, yeah, thank God I did.
So does your strategy include a limit of growth, or is this an outlook, like a 3-year, 5-year investment outlook? Or do you have a point already in your head? You're like, if it gets here, I'm pulling it out, and then maybe I'll wait for it to dip again. What's your strategy on a stock that's performing this well?
I'm wanting to go more long-term with it. But at the same time, I also realize stocks sometimes, when they go real high real soon, they can potentially be a downfall. So I'm going to be monitoring it to see if there's a sudden decrease compared to the increase. As long as there's no sudden drop, I want to stay in. But if there's a sudden drop, then it's letting me know things are going to go south real quick. But as of right now, I'm seeing Dave & Buster's as being a long-term strategy.
And now that you invested in it, every time I go around, I notice how many Dave & Buster's are being built across the U.S. just when I'm traveling. And that mm-hmm. it should have been something that I obviously saw but completely missed because I wasn't thinking of it as that investment opportunity. But now I even notice more commercials on TV that reference Dave & Buster's as the adult arcade.
Yeah, I mean, plus me personally, when we first made our picks, we made picks on things that we actually were involved in. Dave & Buster's right around the corner from me, so every Wednesday it's half off. And I'm like, man, I love Dave & Buster's. So hopefully this actually bring some type of return, and so far so good.
This is paid for at least one visit, I imagine.
Right.
And so my lead pick was World Wrestling Entertainment, and that one is the leader or the second largest gain in my pack at 7.902%. It's that merger, and this one I think is a long-term play that WWE will likely be a $90 stock in the next 2 years. Just with the contract, that one contract we reference in other episodes of them moving with Fox, and that move hasn't even started yet, so they're not getting the ancillary returns and eyes on their product that will begin once they start broadcasting on that station, which is no longer cable, so that's going to assist it as well.
You know what's funny? WWE has their hand in so many different pots in regards to TV shows, movies, the streaming that you speak of. Like, that really was a smart play, because WWE is involved in a lot of different things that we might even know about. So,
and while they have some really trash movies, they actually have some decent movies. That The Rundown with The Rock, they produce. Walking Tall, they produce. I know they did one or two of them with Holly Berry, like the one with the cell phone and somebody in the trunk. I'm looking for it to see. But The Call with Holly Berry, they produced that one. And then they have ones like Leprechaun Origins. I didn't know they were still making Leprechaun movies, but they produced that. Yeah, so they have a Scooby-Doo in WWE.
I'm
just looking on Google right now, and this is what's popping up. Because I knew there was some. There's one movie that I'm missing that I distinctly remember being like, WWE was involved in this? No way.
I just saw a movie the other day that was produced by WWE. What was the name of that movie? I don't remember the name of it, though. That's the only thing. I saw the WWE production. I was like, wait, they produced this? There's no wrestlers in this movie. It was actually a pretty good movie. I just don't remember the name of it.
Yeah, like, and I think the ones listed on their Wikipedia are ones that they were the lead one. But I see them referenced in so many other films where they weren't the lead studio, but were part of it. So maybe it's one of those things, we'll pay for a wrestler to be in the movie if you give us producer credit. But I don't know.
Yeah, either way, man, that was a good pick. That was a smart business move. Vince McMahon, let me ask you this. If Vince McMahon steps down and the company is in the hands of somebody else, is that going to change your long-term view, or are you going to stand pat?
I think it would make it actually stronger. That if they have – because right now his kids are all involved in the company, and they've been in the company since teenagers. They've been characters of the show, but they're also the real leaders of the organization. So his two kids. One of the lead wrestlers is running their developmental brand that's pretty much just broadcast on their station, and that's called NXT, and Triple H, the wrestler, is the lead. He produces that, runs it, plans it, writes it. And it's expected when Vince McMahon steps down, Triple H will lead the role of the direction of the company. And that's another brand outside of their SmackDown, which was sold for $1 billion to Fox. Their Raw deal, which is up for renewal next year, and USA is going to have to pay significantly more than they have in the past. And then once they continue to expand, another station might be like, we'll buy NXT the rights to broadcast that too if you give us the opportunity. And it might not be for $1 million, but if it's $200 million, it's more than they're getting now for it. And that only goes back to investors. So I think the company is in very good hands, as they've taken much of the production costs, internalized it, and they're good at what they do. They don't need to depend on the broadcast networks. Now they'll get assistance from Fox, so the broadcast will only become better. But they've developed their broadcast capabilities for over 30 years now. Normally, that's the barrier when leadership steps down. I think the stock's going to continue to perform as just a media company that's growing. As you indicated, they're into so many aspects other than just the wrestling. And now that Fox is going to be the football NASCAR wrestling station, that's only going to help their valuation in terms of eyes on the product.
Right. And I know we're going to discuss other stocks, but to give you an idea of how prevalent wrestling is, my sister sent me a photo, because SmackDown was in the Memphis area, and she took her kids, and they enjoyed it. They really enjoyed it. And they don't even watch wrestling, but being at the event and seeing, you know, everything live, it was something they'll never forget. So that tells me wrestling, it's not going anywhere anytime soon, because it plays on the basic needs and the basic things that kids want to see. So,
yeah. And so I guess let's go on to your next stock down your list.
CBS.
Crush.
Yeah, CBS. CBS is doing really well also. like I told you before, it's a brand name, so I kind of just feel like it's a license to print money. Overall, at what, 50.97? What's that, 10.84% as far as growth? CBS is going to be fine no matter what. I mean, it's one of the major networks. So based on them, not only the TV stations and things they produce, the things they have their hands in outside of that, I see them as being a long-term strategy because, like I said, it's a brand name. It's CBS, it's ABC, it's NBC, basically. So based on where they are currently, I see them as being something that I stay with over a long term. Even if it starts to drop, the beta on it's pretty good. So I see myself being with CBS for a while because they just seem like a company that is going to continue to grow, continue to make money. And whether you're older, younger, in between, CBS is one of the brand companies that you know of. So that's something I plan to stick with.
Looking at CBS and more of their portfolio, that they do have a specialization in kind of that 16 to 25-year-old with MTV and VH1 and those Paramount networks. They have a movie studio where they're making money. They have their brand name TV shows filled with NCIS and those shows.
True Bloods.
One of the things with CBS is they're not even really engaging in their complete online presence, that they have the Paramount Network, but they produce like one show every quarter. So last quarter it was Waco. This quarter they have a Yellowstone one that I think stars Kevin Costner and some other people. So it looks like they're building a network too for that online presence. And it's weird that I remember, I think it was 08 or 09 when the writer strike occurred and the networks were arguing the writers can't strike because this online money really isn't that much. They can't, this doesn't belong to them. And the writers are like, no, we need a chunk of that. And at the times how they tried to convince the public that it was a non-concern. And you see the foresight of that writers union of knowing how big this money bag will be at the end of the internet rainbow, that now these stations are really starting to utilize to build it. And I think Netflix gives them all comfort in their knowledge that we could produce just not regular TV, but edgy TV that might not be for everyone, but put it on our own stations, and we could do whatever we want with it and keep it in our library. And so CBS, that's a hold for me as well.
Yeah, it's not a business, man. It's a business, man. So, yeah.
Yeah. Hovey.
Right.
And so, well, my other one is Host Hotels. And this one got a loss for me for this four-week period. Overall, I'm still up from when I got into it initially last quarter. But for the four-week period, Host Hotels is down a 1.25%. As part of that, there still will be the opportunity for me to get a dividend. But if I'm looking at the overall growth, that's the importance of dividend, that you could calculate that into your returns. So if I do get a 2% dividend and the company goes down 1%, then I got a 1%, but at least I got something in that investment. And so that creates the stability of the portfolio. One of the things that did affect it is they have purchased, or they had a lot of expenditures this quarter as they've purchased a bunch of hotels, Hyatts, and a $3 billion deal. So they've had to spend more money over that time. And that affects the bottom line, as they're not going to get that money back until they take complete ownership and start reconciling those returns and that money. But just a thing, it is up since their last earnings report, 12%. So even the loss of 1% in this time frame, I'm not concerned with it. This was a long play because it's a dividend stock. It's kind of staying in my IRA portfolio, so I don't have to pay taxes on it till I retire.
Right. Yeah, and I remember when you first told me about Host Hotels, I started looking into it myself because initially, man, you saw some good gains coming from it. So I agree with you. I think that long term it's going to be a good play, and you need to stick with it. For me, AudioCos Limited had a little bit of a drop at 4.35%. But for me, based on the price of the stock and the potential of it moving forward, I'm going to stick with it only because I feel like moving forward, the company still has potential for growth. Now, we talked about this before with Micron and companies like that, whenever you start talking about tariffs and how that can affect your stock. But where we are now, I still want to stick with it because it's not an expensive stock. It still has great potential. And I at least want to see where we are going into November, December before I make any decisions on it. But for right now, I'm just going to stick with it just based on the price alone and the potential for where it could go versus where it is. So,
yeah, the semiconductors scare me, so I kind of stay out of it. And it's the same reason why I chose Illinois Tool Works to also be a manufacturing arm. They're another dividend stock. They've only gone up 0.827% in this four-week period, but there is an expected dividend of 2%, so I should get the 3% return that I was looking for. It is a high entry point, so the dividend could increase to maintain stability of investors in the stock. So that's why it is at 148. If they cut that in half, or if they did a split of the price, it would create more sell-off, create more volatility and opportunities for earnings. But as an organization, they're looking for that stability. Their value is that they have consistent dividend payoffs. In the past, their research reflects it, and the health of the company. And so they do have debts that they're working on paying off, but that's why they're looking for that consistent cash flow. And as long as they have a direction, I'm going to stay in it because I'm getting that dividend, but it's another one where there's no advantage of me pulling out of that since it's in my IRA and I'm keeping my dividend stocks in that area.
Right. With me, speaking of dividends, Thor Industries, currently it's at trading at $98.69. It's up 3.97%. Basically, when I first read about Thor Industries, I didn't know much about it. But looking at its growth and its momentum from last year to now, it's at a higher standpoint because it's like you're almost coming in at $100. But the thing about the growth from where it was last year to this year, I think it's at 50% growth. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but given the dividend and the growth, it's something I'm going to stick with as well. And we'll just see. Main thing right now, the stocks that I picked, I'm planning to stick with as of right now. I don't see things changing unless there's a drastic. The only reason I would potentially pull out is if there's a drastic increase, because whereas most people would think that's a good thing, knowing trends, if there's a gradual increase in something, that's meaning it's leading up for a fall. If there's a continual increase, however, that's something I'll be more interested in. And I see Thor Industries being a continual growth, being at continual growth. So it's something that I'm going to stick with. Plus the dividend gives me more incentive. Like we said before, with our prior stocks, dividends, at least you get something back. So I'm sticking with Thor Industries.
And my final one is TJ Maxx, which is at $95.17, an 8% overall increase in the four-week period. And this is one that I picked out just because it was anecdotal. I shop there. I like Polo, and even going to the clearance center, Polo is expensive, and I can get nice button-ups at TJ Maxx for $39.99. I think there's value in a company that not only sells clothes but brand name clothes, and just not the Chaps aspect but the higher brand names. And people are always looking for a deal in the market. And every time I see a new shopping center go up that tends to have nicer stores, there's a TJ Maxx close to it. And I think that's another brand indicator of success to come, that they're growing with the market and where the new developments in cities are going, at least in Houston. So some of it's anecdotal. Some of it is looking at the dividend that's involved in it. But just that segment, even if the market gets worse in terms of buying power, customers are going to continue to look for savings. And at that point, TJ Maxx would be even more attractive than it currently is at this 8% growth in this time period. That's one I'm probably going to hold on to and invest more in over this period.
Yeah, I feel like TJ Maxx is to you what Dave and Buster's is to me. Same thing for me. I've been noticing a lot more TJ Maxx lately. And depending on the area, you really can go in and get some good stuff at a good price, which further fuels the reason why it's a good pick. So good job, Chris.
And I will say, to follow up on the episode last week, I told everybody I invested in cryptocurrency, and this is what I get because I didn't know enough about it or the market trends, or didn't analyze enough before I did. So I'm currently in this drop where it has gone down about 10% or 12% in the time period since I purchased it. So it's just interesting. While it does kind of reflect the activity of the VIX over the time period, I probably should have listened to my own advice and analysis, and looking at the overall VIX that hasn't been performing in that same manner, that it's taking a drop of about a not even a 10%, like a 5% drop. So the cryptocurrency, while there was a correlation with the VIX for a minute, sometimes it's outside of the outside of that correlation. One of the things identified with the cryptocurrency is recently this week, the SEC determined cryptocurrency is not a security, but it's a commodity. So that will affect the way that it's traded as well as reviewed. And we'll go over that a little more on the next episode. But this has been The Dividend, episode 20. And next on the Fees Always Win will be